96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 20th of February, 2023, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. And this morning we have lots to talk about. I want to talk about the Prime Minister's National Address and CARICOM meeting. I have a particular headline I want to talk about today, a headline of my own making. It's Anatomy of a Protest. And I have joining me today Mr. C.A. Newry. I've asked him to join me because I think that I should, in an abundance of caution, create an environment where we can have, I want to say like the best conversation possible, right? But what I mean is that we could have a conversation that is both thought-provoking, right, informative, interrogative, and critical thinking, but also balanced, right? I also want to have a balanced conversation. I want to weigh perspectives against each other. And I want to, most of all, ensure that we are following or we are bound by the rules of media and journalism. And while we are not journalists, right, we are not reporters, to some extent we are bound by those same rules. And so I've asked Mr. Newry to join me today to create that environment by providing another perspective and balance, but also to let's create a interesting conversation with our different perspectives. And while we may agree on many of the issues that will be raised today, we don't agree on all of them. But before we get there, before we get to Anatomy of a Protest and the PM's National Address and the 44th CARICOM meeting, I just got a couple of things I want to mention. You definitely got to pick up a copy of today's Guardian. It is very important to read those stories. Will give you lots of context for the discussion we're having today and Bahamians will be having over the next several weeks and months. We're on the front of the Tribune. We have a headline, Another Man Questioned as PM Faces New Threat. I just want to say this is the second article where the suspect has not been named. And usually, you know, they
strange
name suspects and they name people who have been charged. And I don't know if there is
published pictures.
Right, there's sufficient information being disseminated around these threats, particularly if public policy is being created or amended or changed based on these threats, right?
And I want to add this into the record. Right? Mm-hmm. Hopefully you can hear me with my mic, can you? The PM, when he was deputy, thus far, he is the only leader, MP, leader, right, say, between Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister, who has been attacked at his house, held hostage for a short period of time, detained, then robbed. So having that as a backdrop, that fear, that anxiety, have his entire family held hostage for a period of time, right? By assailants, marauders coming into his house. Right?
And we've been making a distinction between protesters that may have gone and chained themselves to a leader's gate, right? We're making a distinction between that type of action and criminal action that amounts to serious crime.
Yes. And so I my point is, I see the anxiety that he may have. Say, I have a duty of care to my family. I got to take everything serious. Whereas we know that a former prime minister, and by this example, Hubert Minnis, said, but we get threats all the time. That comes with the job. You know, MPs get threats. The former prime ministers get threats, right? Mm-hmm. I remember we had a prime minister who they put bomb, what do you call it, dynamite underneath a bridge, right? No one's arrested with that either in Abaco. Mm-hmm. So it's part, there'll be some who say this part of the job. Mm-hmm. Bohemians are vocal, but not necessarily will push that in into reality.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the history of him personally being a victim of crime, I see the need, or I can appreciate the response or the concern of what he's having right now.
Right, we can appreciate it. And this is why I say, Mr. Nuri, that we must have, we absolutely need in a small island developing state where it is virtually impossible to avoid conflicts of interest, that you have to have mechanisms that transparently and overtly and aggressively identify and address conflicts of interest and manage them, right? And so when you speak to understanding the impact that those experiences would have had on the prime minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
We also know that the current commissioner of police would have, before appointed commissioner of police, experienced threats again. I think they may have attempted to kill him,
yes,
right? And so the question is, is the creation of policy being unduly or unfairly, but unduly impacted by the personal experiences of policymakers, right? Versus created based on the experiences of policymakers versus using a collection of data and protocol and policy and and standard and algorithms to determine what policy is, because, like you say, the former prime minister, Sim Van der Kaye, he's a leader. You get threats.
Mm-hmm.
Are we creating draconian policies based on the personal experiences of individuals versus a technical assessment?
And I don't know. And it's a good question and should be analyzed. And this is where we're supposed to have independent bodies to weigh in to say, how far do we go?
Right.
We've had former prime ministers who is bracing their head with peanuts. We have had former prime minister, deputy prime minister, who touch a person's shoulders and then in return they get slapped across the face.
MP.
And we have had deputy prime minister at that time, assisting the food vendor.
Oh, right. That's not Rollins and Turner.
No, that's a different type of slap. That's an assault for whispering things in people's ear type thing.
Yeah.
And then we have had former prime ministers whose wives have been accosted when they're going to vote and getting water thrown on them or some sort like that. Mm-hmm. So there is a concern for civility, concern for family. One must now question whether there's a need for a detail to be attached to our prime minister's family, or is that too far? Right. If there's concern about your person, say, well, Bohemians have gone to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Does that extend to your wife? Does it mm-hmm. extend to your children and your grandchildren? Should there be a police detail? Are we prepared to pay for that, or we just say no? Bohemians aren't that right. violent.
And
right? They're just limited.
And let's take it out of the realm of sort of like politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
What one politician thinks they need versus another. And let's take it back into the realm of governance. This leads us to a very basic and expected question. Do we need a prime minister's residence? Do we need an official residence for the prime minister that will come with security detail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the location has been chosen because of the security needs of the residence, right? Where it's resourced with security guards, officers.
Thus far, all of our prime ministers have been rich men, right? Rich men who can afford big walls, big yards. So there was never a need, per se, to have a prime minister residence because the yard's so big, you can secure it mm-hmm. with additional security to it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the future, perhaps we'll have a working class prime minister.
Take it out. I love that. Take it outside of that realm. We don't need a poor prime minister to understand the importance of this or to realize the importance of this, right? How integral it is. I want a prime minister's residence because I determine what happens, right? This idea, because in the Bahamas, like many places, this idea that when I get into my house, that's private. You can't talk to me about what I do in my house, what I say in my house, and who I have in my house, and who I talk to, what I talk about. But if you're my prime minister, I want you in the prime minister's residence. That ain't your house. Mm-hmm. That's our house. And we dictate what happens in our house. And
perhaps if you want to, that's the concern right there. The idea that the Bahamian people wanted to be our house, to have that there be some accountability of what happens in there, who you invite, security checks and balances, what type of party, what type of expenditure. And we have a system where the prime minister is the end all and begin all. So there's no accountability as whatever he says goes.
Right. And this makes
sense. So that comes a conflict to what the Bahamian people say, well, I ain't giving him no house, man. He just gonna abuse it.
Right. And this may seem petty, right? I'm gonna start off with this question that I asked a long time ago. Why does it appear that the government only makes important announcements only at special interest group functions like business,
they don't care
Outlook,
about us.
And Rotary,
they
right?
They don't care about us.
And it leads us to the CARICOM meeting. Why are John Kerry and the Secretary to the World Trade Organization and Justin Trudeau in the country? Why are they here? What are they talking about? And why don't we know? Why are we never involved in the decision-making,
and
right?
I don't want to talk about that, but I know we're talking about the protest first.
I know.
That is important. I'm going to write it down right now so you don't forget to bring it back up.
Right. But the point I'm making is this, is that we have a political culture where we, the citizen, are continually being removed from the decision-making process. We know where big decisions are made. Decisions aren't made at the boardroom table. Decisions are made at the bar after the meeting, at the dinner before the event, right? In the limo after the event. And so what goes on in the prime minister's residence, right? We get to say, oh no, you can't have any meetings, you can't have any formal meetings at the prime minister's residence. We have a designated location for you to meet with world leaders, mm-hmm. and it shall not be at your
private
residence,
mm-hmm.
right? These are protocols that should be in. It's not a matter of politics. This is a matter of governance, you know? And that's the point I wanted to make. It may seem petty at first, but we have a current trail of activities that we could touch where we could see the proximity, the distance between the citizen and the decision-making process. And creating an official residence for the prime minister begins to establish culture that disrupts the centralization of power and the removal of the citizen from that power. Look here, and guess what? I wasn't even ready to start the show, Mr. Nuri.
Yeah, I understand. So that's why we have to go back.
But it's only one thing I want to just touch on quickly. There was a traffic fatality this weekend, Saturday afternoon, mm-hmm. in the Arawaki area.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tragic event, as all traffic fatalities and all fatalities and all loss of life are tragic. I just want to say to the Royal Bahamas Police Force and the Ministry of National Security, I see y'all on the job because I saw you last night on that podium. Now that a tourist has been killed, will you take traffic enforcement seriously? Is this not the paramount? Is this not it, the pinnacle of devastation and tragedy, that a tourist has died? If you don't take it seriously for your own people's sake, will you take it seriously for the sake of protecting the tourism product? I beg of you, Saturday, on my way to the farmer's market at the Marathon and Prince Charles intersection to go over to the East-West Highway, a car in front of me was pushed almost into the median by a driver who was on his cell phone in the left lane going south onto East-West Highway and just veered right into the right lane. Young, handsome man, full of foolishness on his cell phone. He was on, he didn't even realize that he almost killed the people. So I say this once again, Royal Bahamas Police Force, Ministry of National Security, ministry responsible for transportation and housing. Now that a tourist has died in a traffic fatality, will you take it seriously? Producer, let's go to a break, and when we get back from the break, we're going to continue on our dive into the anatomy of a protest. You're on the clock. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.
Much going on in the world today? Only accepting cash at your business can be risky. Let Fidelity offer you and your customers safety, convenience, and the flexibility of a fixed or mobile terminal. Take it with you, on the move and on the go, because business should never stop. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit us at any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Here we go.
J.S. Johnson. Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best. Always, you're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green. Mr. C.A. Newry is joining me. We are, Cecil, let me start this segment by getting to the text. First text says, good morning, those 3 and 4 wheelers should not be allowed on the road. Of course they shouldn't. Can easily turn over. What about the piece of steel barge floating off Go Slow Bend for over a month waiting for a boat to crash into it before it is moved? Please, government, be proactive. Another text, great show as usual. You forget. Oh, I don't know what that means, Texter. Somebody about Bimini. Great show as usual. Brave name is brave. He's supposed to take them threats like he brave. That's up me. Another text, protesters can be lumped in with kidnappers. The We March protesters went to Honorable Perry Christie's house. That was traumatic too. Don't dismiss protesters. Well, Texas, I'm glad that you put that text on the table so we could discuss it. But before I get to that particular issue, let's start off here, Mr. Newry. Because of the laws and rules surrounding discussing matters and cases that are before the courts, in the media, we have to be very careful about what we say and how we say it. As a reminder to me and to the listening audience, the texters and the callers, let's be measured in our speech. I'm not saying that we can't talk about things, but we got to be measured in our speech. A question I always ask is, can we could discuss what's in the public domain, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Next question. Is critically interrogating the protests and the state's response, and I put in quotations, denying the right to freedom of association. Oh, is it denying the right to a freedom of association and the right to freedom of expression? Some people, when I even ask them about it.
Go and insult it?
Yeah, like if you don't just wholeheartedly agree with the protesters, then you are, you are denying the right to free speech. And
it's most unfortunate.
Yeah.
And my concern is, again, this gave the government an opportunity to educate the public. And I'm finding that those who have the knowledge and the education to explain things to the public is not doing that,
mm-hmm.
right? Of course, we know that we have liberties, and but liberties go to a certain extent when they infringe on other people's freedoms, yeah. right? We heard earlier that a particular group, right, planned a protest, right, of at the venue where the CARICOM meeting is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they give a list of things that they plan to protest. It seemed to be, the protests seemed to be of local nature,
yeah.
things that our government is not doing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. I said it didn't make no sense to me if they're protesting, but I appreciate Bohemians taking the advantage of their systems and using
yeah.
the opportunity to protest. So that was cool, right? The response was the roadblocks, which is a response by the police force to make sure secure. The response was the Minister of National Security.
Were the roadblocks a response, a direct response?
And that's why I'm getting there. I just want to list all the things. The response was the Minister of National Security said, try me. You can see what could happen if you come out there. And the response was barricades, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this is where my problem is, which is poor governance and poor policing. And I want to first commend the Prime Minister and, of course, the Chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party and Minister of Foreign Affairs, who said, thank you, Bohemian public, for being patient with us for what we carried out.
Did you use the word commend just now?
I used the word commend.
Thank you for
acknowledging that we had patience, right? But it's not patience that was the issue.
Right, because acknowledging that we had patience is not the same as acknowledging that you messed up.
Yes, but they say that's where I'm getting at.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily the minister or the government that messed up. It's the police force that messed up. And despite the Prime Minister addressing the people, flanked by all kind of senior policemen, big man them right in the back, they didn't address the public at all. And usually when you see the Prime Minister is in front and they have senior police officers and ministers behind him, it means that there's going to be a question and answer period and these people is going to address the concerns. That never happened. So why they had the police, Commissioner of Police and the Commodore and all those other people, I do not know why they had it, because they didn't address the public. But this is my concern. I want to say that so you can respond to this, right?
Yeah.
The police force has a duty of care to the Bohemian public.
Mm-hmm.
That duty of care is to make sure they're informed, that they have a sense of place, that they have a sense of nationhood, that they feel mattered, right?
Mm-hmm.
We knew that CARICOM is going to happen. We knew that inconvenience was going to happen. However, the police force did not announce that we will have some road blockage going toward Bahama Hotel.
Right.
Therefore, if you need to, go find an alternate route or plan your day accordingly, that you have to leave early. There's going to be tell the public that there will be checkpoints if you come into work. Because I'm the person who's leaving my ID home all the time. If you're coming to work, make sure bring your ID or we have to detour you back home. Not that I reach to work, just about to go inside and say, boss, you don't have no ID. That's why I got to spin back around in the traffic. See, that's inconvenience, which means it was bad governance.
Now, okay.
Bad policy. And someone needs to say, we did it wrongly. And the next time it's going to happen, because the king soon come to the Bahamas, that we ain't going to do it again.
Right, because I'm asking you, do you think the roadblocks were solely in response to the not a threat, because they said they promised we are going to protest? That's what you think the roadblocks are solely because of that?
Yes.
Or see, because I'm going to say that the roadblocks and the road changes, the diversions, the security measures were not in direct response to the threat of a protest.
You don't think so? Go ahead.
No, I think the radio silence, the lack of communication, the lack of public notice is an indirect response, right? Is a response to the protest.
No, I thought that's incompetence. That's the incompetence of the police force.
Whether there was a declaration that they were going to protest, they made requests, they declared they were going to protest, they made requests for permits to protest, right? Whether any group did that or not, we would have seen those security measures. I think the lack of information, the lack of public disclosure is in response to the protest. And that also signals incompetence, I think.
The lack of information is a direct testimony that they don't care about Bohemian citizenry. That's what it is. They blatantly are not concerned about what the public thinks because they are in control. But let me say this. When I was in my small Jukcha college abroad, right?
Yeah.
When the school students protested and participated in demonstration, the police force come and tell you, hey, I hear y'all apply for demonstration. Y'all will be situated over to J period over there. That section here.
Yeah.
All protesters will be in this section. These will be the rules. These will be the barricades. And in fact, they even sometimes bring you water to say, well, we understand you got to protest and we ain't going to complain. But this is the rules of the protest. None of that was given. And I'm saying we're trying hard to be first world.
But listen, one of the questions I was going to ask, particularly after not seeing anything in the newspapers this morning, was did the group apply for a permit to protest? Was it denied? Was the original permit denied, but they were offered to be allowed to protest at Goodman's Bay?
Well, I can't name it. Let me say that. I think it's a misnomer saying the word protest because there was nothing to protest. So I think demonstrating.
Wait, hold on.
Should be allowed to demonstrate.
Two things. They call themselves protesters. The second thing is there's plenty of things to protest.
Yes.
You say yes too. Don't glide over that. There's plenty of things to protest.
You may have listed a number of things to protest and so other Bahamians can join in. But my point is, the police force were aware, even if they didn't apply, no one applied, they were aware that they were. And one should assume that all big meetings such as this have protesters no matter what. Local, internationally, they should have designated how a protest will be done so the Bahamian public will be aware. Suppose I'm not a part of that strange group, that strange political group, but I had concerns, I wanted a voice and I wanted a protest to get some international acclaim from it.
Yeah, yeah.
Instructions should have been given to say, Nuri, if I had a thought in my head, know that you have to be at Goodman's Bay
and
stand there with your placard.
Right. So let me respond to that.
Go ahead.
I would you.
This is, it makes sense.
This is not just a CARICOM meeting.
Yeah.
The presence of Kerry, Trudeau, the Secretary General of the World Trade Organization, elevates this to a high-level security meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
The government should have, like you say, the government should have expected protesters. The government should have expected protesters.
And guided them.
Right. Understanding that we have a right to protest.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, should have guided them. Weeks before the meeting, they should have said, for those who intend to protest or demonstrate,
we invite you all
to tune into this website or to this channel at this time, as the Minister of National Security or the Ministry will outline all requirements and expectations for protests and demonstrations.
But we had a Minister of National Security came on defensive, who's trying to obfuscate the workings of those who would
now have. You heard statements from the Honorable Wayne Monroe?
I did.
Why you don't be voting? Anyway, you have a very Christian WhatsApp inbox. Don't be sending me nothing.
I need to send it to you too?
Yes. Yeah, now, I've heard the Minister of Foreign Affairs. I've heard both of his statements.
That was afterwards. The Minister of National Security was before the event.
Yeah, yeah.
One was before, one was afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Minister of Foreign Affairs came out and called people a terrorist, considered a terrorist in the Bahamas. That's a particular and say that they are a danger because they are known for shooting guns in the air.
Pause right there. I listened to the initial and the secondary statement, right?
Okay.
The voice note and the video.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard the Minister of Foreign Affairs use the word terrorist.
You didn't have, let me play it.
Hold on. I heard him.
It's a threat. He says a
right. I
a
heard him say.
I stand corrected.
Things.
Say threat. He said a word of threat.
That led me.
A national threat.
Right. He said things that led me to believe that others would infer directly that he is suggesting that these are akin, or these actions can be likened those of terrorists.
I feel terrorized when I see the antics they do. I feel terrorized, so I understand the inference. My concern is the response and good governance, right? Yeah. What is the responsibility of good governance? And by saying that, thank you for being patient, does not address that those poor governance,
right,
and moving forward, such things need to be corrected.
Nor does it address the disruption in the effective and efficient movement of goods, people, and services, and any economic loss that would have been incurred or breaches that would have occurred due to
a lack of productivity, which suggests that they plan to do it again because they don't care about the citizenry of the Bahamas. The idea that they didn't acknowledge that there was a problem and we will tweak it for the next go round.
Yes.
And that we'll give you sufficient notice. We'll give you a alternative route to go. Because all these things was done on that day when people didn't know what was going on. The traffic back up for miles. You're waiting. What is happening?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you had, like, after 3 hours in, you hear that, oh, yeah, they have blockage of the road. And then you need checks and balance, the act of IDs. And you said, but if you had to tell me this beforehand, I would have come prepared. And the truth is, they don't care about us. That's what Michael Jackson said.
I mean,
they don't really care about us.
I like to approach it like this. The prevailing political culture cannot tolerate. It no longer fathoms that the citizen is central in decision making and governance. The current political culture cannot tolerate it. To use a phrase used by the late Miles Monroe,
mm-hmm,
right? It's detestable to the political culture that citizens would think that they should be included at this level of governance. Now, Cecil, I got a call on the line. I got a text, and then I want to read these questions out, man.
Go ahead.
Because you just get too interesting, and we don't get to all the questions. The response for the roadblocks were horrible. As there was no notice given on Wednesday, they sent out a notice for the next day. They caused the traffic inconvenience. This is the facts. Another text. In November, I was traveling on West Bay, heading east on the dual carriageway. I was on the right side of about 10 of those four-wheelers. One of the tourists switched into the right lane without looking to the right or applying brakes. I had to slam on brakes to avoid hitting them. She was inches from my front bumper. To this day, I have no clue what she could have been thinking. I hope her family members told her how close she came to meeting her maker. Another text. It's also about traffic and the groups of tourists randomly crossing the streets. And I wonder if the police are not there for traffic enforcement. Aren't you there to moderate the behavior of tourists for their own safety? It's so important. Another text. Why are you beating your heads over this situation? You see who compromises the leadership of the police force. They are totally unqualified to make proper decisions on any situation. Dear Texter, I'm responding to that because you are technically incorrect, I think. I think that is an unfair assessment. Now, if you had said to me that the police are subject to the decision, right, to the decisions by the high-ups, like if you tell me even though they're supposed to be independent, they're not allowed to operate as an independent.
And this is where I come right back to the prime minister. See, call it back again. The prime minister had national address, and he had some constitutional entities behind him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which has independence from the office of the prime minister, right?
Yeah.
Who does their job separately, right? And the idea that they formed a security force behind the prime minister, not address the public as to where and their responsibilities, whatever it is, it's a concern. It's a concern, and it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good, and I need to make sure the prime minister is aware that having all of these defense force officers and the police force officers behind them, especially when the media does not have access to ask them why they're there for the first instance,
like,
what's their responsibility for the second instance?
Why you look like you're defending the prime minister, but there's nobody from questions, and there's not even anybody there to answer. Why was the minister of foreign affairs not there?
Insulting,
right?
And has the minister of foreign affairs? Did the prime minister address the statement of the vice note of Minister of Foreign Affairs that when you talk about immigration, but we can talk about that soon. But let's hurry up, transition, so we can talk about these things.
I tell you, the questions are good. We got to get to the questions.
Let's go to this caller.
Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Caller, this is Dr. Always along with you and New Year.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm holding. I have a concern. talking about good governing, right?
Yeah.
I think it was a week before last or so, or last week, Fred Mitchell came on the airwave and he was speaking and he said the Bahamas are a rich country.
Mm-hmm.
After he had said that, assistant commissioner the guy who was next to Philip Brave David.
Clayton Fernanda, Commissioner of Police. And
no, not the police, Commissioner
then
of Police.
Then there was Wayne Monroe, and then there was Minister of National Security, then there was the Commodore. So flanking the Prime Minister, there was the Commissioner of Police, Fernanda, then there was the Minister of National Security, Monroe.
No, the assistant Brave Davis.
You mean Chester Cooper?
Chester Cooper, right. He came on after and said that the Bahamas is not a rich country. Okay? And now both of them was on the airwave.
Yeah.
Fred Mitchell on him.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys got to get their act together because they're giving conflicting
statements.
Report pertaining to the richness of this country.
I with you, Brayman. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And we're gonna get into a bit of that. Nuri preempted your question, but I'm glad we took it. Let's go to the next caller, producer. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You there? Okay, caller is not there. All right, Mr. Nuri, you kind of... Like this, we weave in a path between the sort of topic anatomy of a protest and the Prime Minister's address, right? What a presentation. I wanted to ask the audience to assess and rate the national address, but a couple of the questions I have for the audience and for you, Mr. Nuri, was, and I was going to start off, why was the PM flanked by the Commissioner of Police, Minister of National Security, RBDF Commodore, and the Minister of Labor and Immigration, if there was no opportunity or space for them to address questions specific to their portfolios? Another question is, where was the Minister of Foreign Affairs? Another question is, do you think if the Minister of Foreign Affairs was at the podium that the Prime Minister may have felt compelled to address various public statements made by the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Chairman of the PLP as he defined himself in those statements? And do you think that the PM should have addressed the protest at the CARICOM meeting and the RBPF, Minister of National Security, response to the protesters? Or did he address it by not addressing it?
Did he address it by not addressing it? The protest was addressed by the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party. I even though he didn't call any names, he indicated who he is talking about, and he explained in detail why there was a need to for the additional
right.
security.
Just stick a pin. I'm glad you said chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party, because the statement I don't think was befitting a cabinet minister or member of the royal government of the Bahamas. Chairman of the PLP could say things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if the Minister of Foreign Affairs could get away with it, though.
But that's about the same, right? He's chairman of the Progressive
If we were
Party.
A real place.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand your point. So I don't necessarily think that the Prime Minister had there was a need for the Prime Minister to address the protests, the demonstration. However, the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party and also the Minister of Foreign Affairs made a statement about immigration policy and why and to educate the Bahamian people about immigration in general. The Prime Minister had a duty of care, because that caused alarm, to explain that statement or to address that formally. Later on, we saw that the Prime Minister came and gave a national address of the intended, in quotes, the Guardian has pledged. It's a pledge that they hope to do or they will do in the future.
Yeah.
But he did not address the Minister of Foreign Affairs statement on policy.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm betwixt in between on whether what is the real policy, or because it's the Prime Minister making the statement,
let me ask you,
a policy.
Let me ask you another question. Do you think the Minister of Foreign Affairs addressed the government's policy better than we addressed the government policy over the last few weeks and months of this discussion? Because the Minister of Foreign Affairs pointed out, I think, that the population is too small.
Yes.
And we need more people.
Yes.
I think you and I have repeated on the show that the economists that the government has consulted have said repeatedly that the Bahamas needs a million more people to drive its economy to be able to maintain the lifestyle that we've become accustomed to. Mm-hmm. We've been saying that, right? That's one of the things that Fred said.
Yes, and I personally believe, out of all the ministers in the Davis's, well, besides the Attorney General also, between the Attorney General and Minister of Foreign Affairs, they're the most honest. They just talk what is on their mind. They're honest man.
No, pause.
We just don't appreciate their honesty.
You could tell me that the chairman of the PLP
is honest.
But not you can't minister. Tell me that the yes. Minister of Foreign Affairs is honest. For the Minister of Foreign Affairs.
They're different people.
Right. For the Minister of Foreign Affairs to be honest, then this information needs to be released. It needs to be uttered. It needs to be stated, disseminated, or published through official government mechanisms. This is only the chairman of the PLP talking to me and not the official party mechanism.
I think he told you the culture of the Bahamas.
No, I told you the culture. See, this is it. Me and you had the same conversation with the Bahamian people long before.
And the chairman of the PLP echoed.
I like the word echo.
Yeah.
Because we were preparing the Bahamian people. And
now who do you believe? The Prime Minister spoke and the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party spoke. Who do you believe? Who has proven or shown, highlighted the culture of government?
I think they both have.
Okay.
I think by looking at them clearly, we could see, and juxtaposing their actions, we could see what the culture of government is. I see you got a call there, caller. We can come to you right now. You just get ready for the producer. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Nui. Good morning, Ms. Green, and good morning, Mr. Nui.
Morning.
So, Aaron, I enjoy listening to you and see it again. I just enjoy the conversation. But the thing is, I don't know why we are so perplexed at the behavior of the present government and the past, right? So the fact that John Kerry and at least Justin Trudeau was there, we should know maybe the PM was trying to set an example to Mr. Trudeau on how to deal with the protests. Remember the truckers protests and the totalized paradigm that Mr. Mm-hmm. Trudeau created in Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's a despot. So I was wondering, where did they, after the post-pandemic, how could these leaders put the word democracy in their mouths? This is what I'm afraid of. And so, for me, mentioned something very crucial with the disrespect between people as far as the abrupt decision to close these roads and divert and do all of these different things that affected people's daily lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this shows you how they respect us. They are on this pinnacle. And so, the fact that Massa Dam, right, was coming on the plantation had to be cleaned up. So if the Bahamian people can't see the blatant disrespect, the fact that me and you don't deserve a clean environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get this. This is what I'm seeing here. At my level of consciousness, I'm not worrying about anybody else right now because I'm speaking. Listen to me. Just to show you that only when Massa Dam coming, you clean up the plantation. So that's just like when you're saying someone coming and then you clean up your house, right.
Yeah.
But the Bahamian people don't deserve the best. And so, like I've said over and over on the radio, a nation of sheep will inherit a government of wolves. And so, I don't know, you heard the interview with Dr. Mia Motley, Prime Minister, Mia Motley?
Yes, that's the one where
You never heard me mention everything that she's speaking about on the radio over the years, Aaron?
Yes.
You haven't heard? I mentioned these things over and over. Mm-hmm. I love that lady. As a matter of fact, she sounds more gonadal. But I love that lady. She sounds more gonadal than some of our men. Give thanks. I could go on and on, but listen. Man, hey, I got so much to share.
Don't worry, 52. Like, we're gonna do we gotta see how your name is 52. We need to do a 52 Independence podcast where we have 52 as a guest co-host and we interview all of the people who identify as radicals and revolutionaries. On a point that he made, right, about the proximity of the citizen to decision making. In governance. You see the Day's Tribune where it say Prince Edward and wife to visit Bahamas. Now, before you express your outrage, just let me tell you that these are my cousins and they did not even tell me that they are coming. So there's a level of of anger that y'all can't even understand. It's a family thing. How they could be coming to the Bahamas and don't tell me?
I want to know if we paying for it again.
Well, we paving.
We praying. If we paying for them to visit. Mind you, if the roads get paved, I don't really care. I mean, more of them need to come. And I still want to know, is the king coming for the 50th anniversary? Because there's no news as yet. I'm still waiting. You know, all of these things I'm concerned about.
Yeah, because you know how much cookout and raffle ticket we have to sell to be able to pave the roads for the king's visit?
Mm, yeah.
It's going to be tremendous. Okay.
Well, let's go back to your question. So before you get all right. At least one more question.
Okay. Some of the comments that he made. Canada is providing security assistance and millions of dollars of humanitarian assistance.
What that means?
That means we are not going to attempt to dictate to Canada because they have plenty of money. I think that's what it means.
So who the money going to?
I don't know. But it leads to a grander question. The Prime Minister indicated there's a couple of statements he made. It seemed to me like he was selling to me why it is that the Americans and the Canadians and non-CARICOM members are taking and not just present, but taking a central role in decision making, right? And one of the statements is crisis and instability in other countries do not stay contained in those countries because so many of our most serious problems originate abroad. We must work together with other nations to solve them. And then he indicated that Canada is providing security assistance and humanitarian assistance.
I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
Will the Canadian blockade, ship blockade, stop immigrants from leaving their country?
No, I don't think so.
They said no, they ain't stopping us all. We know we have an immigration problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We know the boat's coming. They see the boat's coming and they prepare to let them sail past it. Something is wrong.
Here's the question I have for you. When does diasporic, that's the diaspora, when do the nationals living abroad, right, Bahamians and citizens of Bahamian descent in other countries, right? Mm-hmm. When does diasporic engagement become diasporic interference? When we look to the south, to a country like Guyana, we see that a lot of Guyana's politics is directed or influenced by Guyanese abroad, mm-hmm. Guyanese in the U.S., Guyanese nationals working and making money abroad, and people of Guyanese descent living in the U.S. and other countries, right? And a lot of people on the ground say that this type of interference creates even greater distance from central governance and decision-making for the average citizen. When I look at these statements about Canada, and I'm hearing that there are Canadians of Haitian descent, mm-hmm. and Haitian migrants in Canada that are demanding, right, that they are allowed to pool their resources and then sit like as a decision maker, a part of the decision-making process for what's going on in Haiti. And I imagine that Justin Trudeau came to this meeting and comes to the region with this backing him, this idea that there are thousands of Haitian migrants or Canadians of Haitian descent that have asked him to prioritize this issue at the federal level. And my question is, when does diasporic engagement become diasporic interference? And how is it that Prime Minister, Chair CARICOM, could tout throughout all of the meetings and the press conferences the importance of Haitians being central and Haiti being central in the decision-making process, right? But at the same time, it appears as if Haitians in Canada may be directing this Canadian engagement in the CARICOM process.
Sometimes you're just steward of the plantation. You ain't own this. So the owners have come home and we go back to our regular jobs.
And I think it hits close to home. Prior to this 2021 election, which should have been 2022 election, prior to this, there's at least one group of people or one individual who is a American of Bahamian descent, someone I think who was naturalized American, who has decided that he's launching into Bahamian politics and he's forming a party to influence Bahamian politics, but he live abroad and he already became a citizen of another country.
He can't vote. But before we adjourn,
Guyana has realized that even those who can't vote have power. And how do we prevent that from happening here if in some way we may be enabling it to happen in Haiti?
Interesting. And especially, again, after the Minister of Foreign Affairs, PLP chairman, said there are people in Lifeaki who influence our election process. And we need to be concerned about that.
Right. And all of these things are things we need to talk about. But we can't really have a critical conversation about it if all of the stakeholders are not clear and transparent about what they're doing, and clear and transparent with the Bahamian people, most importantly, about what they're doing and what our obligation and role as a citizen is in this process. Anyway, Mr. Nuri, thank you for joining me on my hour. I'm hoping you or we can take this conversation into the second hour. You guys, you've been on the clock. It's been a hot one. You stay tuned to Guardian Radio.
We definitely continue this. Yes, we have one brief interview and then we'll continue this conversation. Take it right up.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you much, listening audience, texters, callers. We'll be right back. You are on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.